Hey, it's Zach here, and super quick before we dive into the show. If you haven't already, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'll even send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter. All right, on to today's episode. My name is Zach Arnold, and I'm a former Hollywood film and television editor turned career strategist and the creator of Optimize Yourself, where I help artists, creatives, and storytellers just like you design the more balanced, more sustainable, and more fulfilling creative career that you deserve. In a nutshell, I'm Tim Ferriss meets Ted Lasso, minus the mustache, because I am obsessed with both learning everything I can about optimizing human potential while also inspiring you to realize yours. If you are ready to step outside your comfort zone, let's dive right in and unlock the optimized version of you. Hello, and welcome to the Optimize Yourself podcast, where I share honest and candid conversations with best-selling authors, world-class athletes, Hollywood legends, elite experts in a variety of fields, as well as everyday people that are achieving extraordinary things. It means the world to me that with all the podcast choices out there, you have chosen to invest your valuable time, energy, and attention with me. Now, before we get started, don't forget to visit optimizeyourself.me/podcast so you can subscribe, leave a review, and so you can also download your unique customized podcast playlist, where I'm going to send you the 5 best expert interviews from our archives to help you achieve your specific goals. So on that note, without further ado, let's get right to today's guest. Hello, and welcome to Hot Seat Friday, where I give you an inside glimpse into the world of the Optimizer community. Every Tuesday and Thursday morning, I host office hours live via Zoom, where I conduct a series of one-on-one coaching sessions and I help a student workshop whatever challenge they're facing next. We cover topics such as networking and outreach, workshopping resumes and websites, preparing for job interviews, designing career paths, and a multitude of challenges beyond just career growth, including time management and productivity, building and optimizing creative workflows, mindset, burnout, and so much more. These bite-sized 25-minute sessions are jam-packed with practical and actionable strategies that you too can use right away to design the more rewarding, the more fulfilling, and the more sustainable creative career that you deserve. If after listening, you're interested in joining the Optimizer community and having the opportunity to sit on the hot seat yourself, and I promise it's not as scary as it sounds, visit optimizeyourself.me/optimizer to learn more. Again, that's optimizeyourself.me/optimizer. All right, moving on to our second session of the day, we have Deborah. Deborah, I haven't seen you in a while. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well under the circumstances of, you know, just watching the entire industry implode in front of our eyes. But other than that, I'm great.
Glad to hear you're on the same page I am.
I think we're all on the same page right now. So what are we talking about today?
I've been doing the, given that I have a lot of free time these days, I've been doing the design yourself program. And I know I took the, I think I took Focus Yourself with you, and but I decided to read, you had suggested I redo this, and I decided to try it because I felt like maybe doing it on my own, not working with a little less pressure, I might come up with a few more things that might be a little more insightful for me. And I did. And I wrote down the name of the podcast, the hot seat that I listened to that was really helpful. It was with, I'm going to butcher his name, Abanu.
Oh, yeah, Abanu. Yep. Yeah, it was a couple months ago.
Yeah, because it felt a lot. But I guess I was trying to just clarify some of the, what's my specialty, what makes me unique, because I know some of them. Well, the main one, and I checked in with some of my bosses and, you know, sort of got like an idea of what they thought too, but it doesn't feel super unique to me.
So all we're doing today in our hot seat is just determining what's the meaning and purpose of your life. That's all we needed to cover in the next 20 minutes. Okay. No problem. Yeah. No pressure. Yeah. This is very, very challenging. So luckily I have a fair amount of background about what it is that you do and the work, you know, the projects that you've worked on and whatnot. But we're going to go a little bit deeper than that. So very, very briefly, for those that are coming to this cold, they've never met you. Who the heck is Deborah? Give us kind of the 1 to 2 sentence description, just on a base level. Here's what I do for a living, what I've worked on.
I am a motion picture editor, and I primarily work on drama series with probably a little bit of a specialty in family drama. And I've been doing this for about 10 years. I worked on The Fosters and Good Trouble. And then before that, I was an assistant editor on a lot of various projects, from Alias to Brothers and Sisters to Numbers or stuff like that.
Okay. So real basic start. You've worked in editing TV, mostly drama, family drama, network stuff for about a decade.
Yeah.
Right. So just base level. Here's some of my basic work experience. Yeah. In a former life, this is where you defined yourself by what you do. I am a TV drama editor. All right. We're going to go a little bit deeper than that, but we just want to start at everybody's base level. Oh, what do you do? What are you working on? Right.
Yeah.
The way that every networking conversation ever starts.
The one thing I don't like about saying I'm like a drama or like a family drama editor is I found so many challenging things in what I edited that were not. Some of these family dramas take you so far outside even your comfort zone that I was editing karate competitions, or, you know, not at the extent that you were, but every day it was like a different roller derby. I never even seen roller derby in person, you know?
Yeah.
So
I can speak to the complexity of editing karate competitions. Might in fact just be the story of my life literally as we speak. So I can relate to that. So what I want to clarify, I'm not labeling you as a family drama editor.
No,
but that's where we're starting, because that's the way that most people in the industry are going to label you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Deborah. Oh, she's a family drama editor, right? So I want to start there, and I want to help you reconstruct that narrative.
Yeah.
So the very simple narrative, you from other people's perspectives, Deborah is a family drama network TV editor, right? That is your identity in this industry. That's what we're going to work to rewrite. I want to change that narrative. Beyond work that you've done as an assistant editor or an editor in TV, explain to me just a couple of other jobs that you've had outside of this. And I don't care how different or how outside the box they are. Just give me a sampling of other things that you've done in your career.
I was a lifeguard and a swim coach. I used to work at a newspaper, not for very long, but, and then.
In what capacity at the newspaper?
Very base level writer.
Okay, like, so writer.
Yeah. I sort of did it all in one place, but I was a vault librarian, operations manager, assistant editor in commercials in New York. So I sort of like, that's where I made my way up and learned everything I did before I sort of got out here.
Okay, great. So let's use this. This is a great place to start. And again, this usually takes me about 2 to 3 hours. I'm going to do my best to talk about this in 15 to 20 minutes.
I'm sorry.
I don't want you to apologize at all. The reason I say that is I want to qualify for you and everybody else. This takes time. It's going to be very hard to find this answer in 15 to 20 minutes, but I like a challenge. So having said that, I want to look at you from 3 different perspectives. One is from the most well-known perspective. I've been a TV drama family editor for more than a decade, then as a lifeguard, then as kind of a jack of all trades, vault operator, editor, assistant, et cetera, in the commercial world. Connect the dots. What's similar about where you provide value to all 3 of those? And I'm throwing in lifeguard because it's by far the most off the beaten path. And you can't say, well, I was really good at organizing data, right? You need to tell me what made you valuable in all 3 equally.
I was like 17.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know if this is, I cared about my job. I cared about the people who I was working for / saving, you know, like I was committed. I don't know if that's really what you're looking for.
No, this is a great start. This is much deeper than I showed up on time and I was dependable, right? I'm team oriented. I'm a go-getter, right? None of that crap. Like you're saying, I really cared about what I did.
Yeah.
So if we look at the level of care you had as a lifeguard, and by the way, most 17-year-old lifeguards, they're not there because they care about the welfare or well-being of others. They're there because they get paid to be outside and they get to look at all their hot teenage friends in bathing suits. Right. So what, even though I've never been a lifeguard, and dear Lord, I never will be because I'm a horrible swimmer, but I would presume that you probably felt a little out of place in your level of true compassion and caring and dedication to the actual job at 17.
A little bit. Yeah. It was always intimidating to me to feel like every time I would get up in the chair, I would feel a little more responsibility than I'm not sure all kids feel, adults do, but like, it's why I never became an ocean lifeguard. Like I lived, you know, 2 hours from the beach and everybody, you know, we'd go to Delaware all the time. But like, I knew that I just didn't have the commitment level. Like, could I have gotten in shape for it? Yes. But I think I was too nervous to sit there and be responsible for thousands of people in and out of the water all the time. Whereas a pool is like a manageable, even though it can be deceiving, but it's a manageable thing.
So. Sure. That makes sense. So as far as being a lifeguard, one of the character traits it sounds like you bring, or even more than one, it starts with you have a higher level of empathy than others might, and a higher level of dedication to the work and a sense of responsibility. There are plenty of 17-year-old lifeguards that feel no responsibility whatsoever. None. Right. So that would set you apart in that case. Would you say that you're kind of jack of all trades, one person band at this commercial house? Would you say that that was a useful and valuable trait to them as well?
Yes.
Or was it your knowledge of Codex and Patch Bays and et cetera, et cetera?
That helped. But no, I cared. And instead of treating it as a library vault job, I changed the vault system. Like, you know, I developed, like, I don't remember exactly what I did, but I know I worked to improve the system because the guys that I worked with were there before me and after me, and they didn't really have drive. And I wanted to move up, which I knew, but I also didn't like, I felt things could be run better. So I tried to improve things.
Okay. So this is really important. I believe that intention is everything. Why did you want to improve things? Why did you want to update their systems?
Because I like to be efficient. I like to be good at what I do. I care about what I do. And I don't really want to, I don't know. I care about what I do. So I like, if I can help, if I can contribute, be it a team or individually or whatever, I mean, my favorite thing is collaboration, but if I can do all that, that's why.
Okay. So here's where we can differentiate you from others. And we're going to go deeper, but if we're talking about this willingness and ability to organize and update systems in the vaults or whatever it was that you were doing, right? One intention behind that is I need to impress them. I need to show everybody how smart I am so I can get paid more money and I can be promoted. Your intention was, I genuinely want to help make this a better experience for everybody here. I see deficiencies in workflows or systems. The person that was before me, the person that's going to come after me, they're just going to kind of go with the status quo. I think that things can be better for them. Would you say that that was a relatively accurate intention behind why you chose to do what you did?
Yeah.
Now, do the exact same thing for your work as a TV network family drama editor for the last decade. If I were to reach out to your showrunner on, it was Good Trouble, right? For some reason, I can't remember the name of this show. I've been struggling with this since the day that we met.
John Lewis.
Okay. So if I were to reach out to John Lewis.
Sorry. John Lewis was the inspiration for the name.
Oh, gotcha.
That's all. That's how I remembered it for a while. Sure. I'd be like, what am I?
For some reason, I want to keep calling it Bad Girls. That's the title in my head. Cause that's like the idea. Like it's a bunch of, you know, it's a female driven show doing things they're not supposed to be doing. So I keep calling it Bad Girls in my head. I'm like, but it's not. Anyway, that's my problem, not yours. If I were to reach out to the showrunner of Good Trouble and I have a show that's relatively similar, and I said, why should I hire Deborah? What's that person going to say? What did she really bring to your show?
I mean, I think what I...
You have to speak in third person. You can't say I, say she.
She brings a level of caring or passion about the she's about the project that not everybody has. She's extremely tenacious, but knows when to back off. And one of her specialties, as acknowledged by her coworkers and bosses, is pulling more performance out of actors' performances, eking the emotion out of a scene and making it a little bit extra special if she can.
So it's not just because you're good at organizing your dailies bins and you're goal-oriented and an on-time committed team player?
No.
Oh, okay, good. So you're not like everybody else on their resumes. That's good news.
Yeah.
Right. So what we're seeing are the common themes, the connective tissue of this different work experience. It's clear that you have a high level of empathy. There's a level of resilience or tenacity, but with the perspective of, I also know when to stop. Right. This is my default setting that I have yet to figure out. The knowing when to stop and the tenacity, I've not learned how to regulate that yet.
It's their show, not mine.
Yeah. See, and I struggle with that line in many areas of my life.
But I do too. So
now let's extend the conversation. I want to know, outside of your job, whether it's friends, whether it's family, whether it's other peers and colleagues, why do people consistently come to you?
I'd like to think I'm kind, I'm generous, I'm loyal, I care, I listen. I'm highly empathetic, as you said. Mm-hmm. I feel like it sounds really strange to say. I feel like I'm just a really good person. And sometimes I'm not seeing that as much anymore in society as I used to. That makes sense.
And, yes, I would guess you're not the only one that is feeling that at the moment. And I think that I won't go into this too much because we don't have time, but I still believe by and large that the vast majority of people are good people.
Right
now, with everything that's going on in the world, but more importantly, I think it's, and again, I don't want to turn this into a TED talk, and I'm going to not pull on this thread because I could talk about this for hours. But with the way that we are consuming media and the way that media is so highly manipulated through algorithms and everything else, our perception of the world is skewed.
Yes.
And this idea of the world is falling apart and nobody's good people anymore, we go through the same cycle every generation in history, right? So this is not the first time we've been in a place like this. You can trace this back hundreds, if not thousands of years to what's going on right now, right? So you're not the only person that's perceiving it that way. I don't believe that perception is reality, but I understand where you're coming from because I feel the same thing almost on a daily basis.
It's hard not to.
So when I said, why do people come to you? You actually answered with my next question. So you're actually cheating. You're ahead of me right now. Okay. You answered with, what are the character traits that make you the person that people come to, which is great. What I want to know is, what are they actually asking? Give me an example of the questions. What are the problems when somebody reaches out to you? What do they need you to solve?
Can you pick me up at the airport? Can you be with me at a doctor's appointment? Can you help me with this particular thing? So can you just listen? Because can we discuss? Can we, nobody likes to talk about this with me. Can I know you like this? Can we have that conversation?
Mm-hmm.
So
great. Okay. So, and that all those are the signs of a really good friend.
Yeah.
Right. My definition of somebody that's truly a friend, if I blow my tire at 3 a.m. on the 405 in a bad area, I can call this person. And they'll show up. And granted, yes, we have, you know, phones and, you know, AAA and all that. But you get my point.
Yes.
Right. We have thousands and thousands of digital friends, but maybe on a list of, you know, I could fit on one hand, maybe two, the phone calls that I can make at 3 a.m. and somebody's going to rescue me in a bad part of town on the 405 with a flat tire. Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're that person to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I guess. Right. So. It's okay to admit that.
I know it's just hard because I like being that person. That is who I am. Essentially, it's just sometimes you can get taken advantage of, and understanding when that happens and learning how to shut it off, how to say no, can be hard.
It's funny you bring this up. Again, I don't have time to go into it too deeply, but I was recently listening to a book, not the whole book, but going into the summary of this concept about being a cynic or being overly trusting. And if there's two ways to look at the world, one of which is I'm cynical and I don't trust anybody versus I'm trusting, but every once in a while, the cost of that is I'm going to get conned and somebody's going to take advantage of me. And I myself included have been involved in at least one very embarrassing scam where I'm like, I'm not an idiot. How did I let this happen to me? Or I've been taken advantage of. And I really saw that as a character flaw. Like, how could I be so stupid? How did I let these people take advantage of me? But this other viewpoint is that means you're doing a lot of things right, because it means you're willing to trust in other people. I would rather get scammed, you know, 2-3 times in my life and just be like, I'm such a bonehead idiot. I shouldn't have trusted this person, but I'd rather go through life being a trusting person that very occasionally, as long as I can set the right boundaries, I'm not taken advantage of or scammed too often. So yeah. I don't think it's a character flaw that you find that you've been taken advantage of. That means that you're a trusting, good person. So let's take all of this and let's add another ingredient.
Okay.
What are some of the unique skills, abilities, or knowledge that you have? Like if somebody came, like one of the things you said is you really want to get in and fix the systems and the workflows and make things more efficient. Whether it's in work, lifeguarding, friendship, or otherwise, what are some kind of your unique skills or knowledge that you bring to the table?
I communicate well. Not necessarily when I'm on a hot seat.
Not in hot seats. Yeah, it's okay. It's you and everybody else. Don't worry about
it. Yeah. But I'm able to, like you, condense most of the time. I will say when I had a bank commercial, holy, and I had the whole money thing just messed with my head. But normally I have the ability to take large bits of information and condense them down into what I think are the best versions of things. I also have a slightly weird skill at being good at some trivia, not excessively so, but I know my friends are always like, how did you know that? And it's just, I read a lot and I learn a lot and I love history. And so I tend to store odd facts sometimes, which occasionally brings interesting things into the mix. I'm tenacious. That's one that I'm pretty proud of. I also am good at going, okay, this doesn't work. Like ripping it up, starting over, like trying new avenues of approach, like not recognizing that not one way or not the way I did it. Like I love working with directors and finding out like, oh, that was your intention. Oh, now I see it. I like that better than what I did. That makes more sense. And I really like working with people to discover what works best for what I'm doing.
All right. So we now have a lot more ingredients. And again, this takes a lot more than 15 to 20 minutes, but now we have all these components. I'm going to throw this out to the chat as well, and we're just going to workshop this for 3-4 minutes.
Sure.
So the key ingredients are, as far as experience, high level of knowledge in storytelling, specifically in editing and filmmaking, right? As far as general life experience, whether it's lifeguarding, working in a vault or otherwise, or even in the editing world, very good at building systems for more efficiency for the sake of making other people's lives easier. Also add on to that some really interesting, unique knowledge as far as trivia, as far as just facts, as far as history. Now start to add into the mix, into this recipe, somebody that's highly empathetic, that's very good at communicating, that's very good at listening, that's supportive of others, and really wants to be deep into the collaborative process, that's willing to listen to somebody else's perspective and completely throw away their ideas and start from scratch. Think about the intersection of all of those. What are some areas that are the intersection of that? And again, I'm putting this out into the chat as well. So everybody help out Deborah right now. Just throw out random examples. None of them have to be right, but just start throwing ideas against the wall. Where is the intersection of those things that's not just network TV editor on family dramas?
That's what I was struggling with before.
Just start throwing out ideas. Just start to the new process that I teach is going through and helping people to connect the dots. We've got a bunch of dots here. Let's just start to connect them and see where they overlap.
a character trait? Like what
I'm trying to find is an area where we can see the connection between all of these and how we could potentially diversify what you're doing beyond just this one job title or job role. So let me give you an example. This is going to sound absurd to you, but based on everything that you said, given your ability to listen, based on your high level of empathy, based on your knowledge of trivia, and based on your ability to collaborate with somebody, it sounds like you could be a content creator or even a coach to somebody that was a professional trivia or game show player that was highly sensitive, that dealt with performance anxiety. See how that's like just completely outside the realm of what you do now, but you'd be well suited for that kind of job once you learn the skills. Yeah. So I'm not saying go be a career coach to professional trivia players that deal with performance anxiety, but you see how we used all the ingredients to come up with something totally outside the box that you would be well suited for.
Yeah.
I want you to start brainstorming what this might look like. None of these answers are going to be right. All I want to do is plant the seed and start the wheels in motion so that 3 days from now you're brushing your teeth and you're like, oh my God, there it is. It's so funny. That's literally what I was just, Kalika, you're freaking me out. You're freaking me out.
Kalika, that is exactly what I thought about yesterday. And I went, yep. Oh my God, that's so damn different from what I do right now.
Like, but it isn't though. I'm going to stop you right there. And for those that are listening that aren't here, Kalika just put in the chat therapist and then she added social worker. There are a number of people that have moved from being editors and storytellers to being therapists, specifically editors. The reason is, and you don't realize this yet, but I hope it clicks soon. If you've been an editor specifically working in television that's working with other people and collaborating with them, you've been a therapist your entire career. Good editors, they know how to put all the scenes together and make sure that the dialogue lines are where they need to be and they can add good music. Great editors are therapists. They're dealing with the deep inner psychology of the directors, of the showrunners. They're managing the relationships. You're a couples counselor, right? Basically, the editor is the teenager trapped between two divorced parents that hate each other. You have to learn how to mediate those conflicts and listen with empathy and help other people achieve their vision and their goals. You have a lifetime of experience as a therapist. What you don't have is a certification, yeah. Right? Let's flip this for a second. A conversation that you and I have had, that I've had with many other students as well, is that technically what I do is career coaching or productivity coaching. But let's just be honest. I'm unofficially a career therapist. There's a lot of career therapy that happens in this program. It took me a long time to get over the imposter syndrome of who am I to think that I could ever talk about that with somebody else and help them until I realized, oh, I've been an unofficial therapist my entire career. The reason anything ever gets on television or in the movies or anywhere is because somebody has to mediate all the conflict, get everybody to come together and agree on a unified vision and hit the damn output button. That's usually the editor that's in that position. Not always, but usually the editor is the mediator. What people have come to me my entire life for, I am the mediator and the problem solver. I have always been Switzerland. People come to me and like, we just need a neutral party. This, we are in an impasse. We cannot figure this out. Can you just listen to both sides and help us? That's been my position my entire life, for better or for worse. It's very much been to my own detriment as well.
Yeah.
But that's why people come to me over and over and over. Look at the business model that I've built. Literally, I now give advice for a living because I realized everybody had been coming to me for years asking all the same questions everybody here does. I thought, why not turn this into something and why not scale it so I can help more people? So it wasn't a matter of me starting over. It was a matter of me leveraging the lifetime of experience, skills, abilities, unique knowledge, character traits to build this. So I think you have a lot of very similar character traits and a lot of similar experiences and a lot of similar abilities, minus the fact that I bet you're a way better swimmer than I am.
Probably.
I guarantee I'm a horrible swimmer. Horrible swimmer. It's embarrassing. So having said that, I just want you to think about how all these people or all these pieces start to connect, right? So if we were to look at this list very quickly, and then I'll have to move on to the next session for now. We have therapist, social worker. Somebody says my therapist used to be an editor. There's more than one person in therapy that came from the editing world. I know multiple people that have done that. Guidance counselor, if you can stand kids, that's definitely a huge caveat. Psychology professor. You know, what we're seeing is the intersection of listening, communicating, helping others, and really digging into their deeper needs and their psychology. Yeah. Yeah. So I think there are way more opportunities out there for you besides when are they making a new family drama on ABC? So like I said, we're not going to get the answer in 15 to 20 minutes, but something tells me we've planted a seed.
A little, yeah, it's definitely helped. Like I was looking for that. I started to have the aha yesterday with the social worker thing, and then I promptly like shut it down because it was just so not what I had sort of been thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
It just was a pivot that I hadn't expected.
Right. And probably the reason you shut it down was not because of its lack of validity. It was probably out of fear. Like, oh my God, this is so different and it's going to take so much work. And how could I ever think that I could go in this direction? Any of that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Welcome to the inside of my brain. I have dealt with all of this. I still deal with it all on a daily basis. But most likely, if you had that much of an adverse reaction to it, you need to lean into that fear because that tells me you're on to something.
Okay. Thank you.
So is that enough to at least get you started?
Yeah, it'll definitely keep me going and through the class. And you may find this ironic or funny, I don't know what, but given that things have been complicated job-wise, I've sort of been putting myself out there as like, I've applied to LAUSD to substitute and mm-hmm. like, I'm having an interview for tutoring younger kids. I'm doing it because obviously I need to make some money like mm-hmm. somehow, but it's just interesting that it sort of dovetails with this.
Interesting and not surprising at all that what you gravitated towards just for a paycheck are things that deal with you being helpful and having a high level of empathy and being able to patiently listen and communicate.
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of other ways out there to make money right now. Not everybody's choosing to be a substitute teacher or working, you know, as a tutor or whatever it might be. But you have an aptitude for that and you're pulled towards it. Okay. So lean into that. But the more you lean into it, the scarier it's going to get. So just know that that's not a failure on your part. That's part of the process.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
You are more than welcome. I'm looking forward to hearing more.
Okay.
Thank you so much for investing both your time and energy listening to today's show. If you were inspired by this conversation, don't forget to subscribe in your podcast app of choice, and most importantly, leave a review, because that helps move the show to the top of iTunes and get our message out there to those who need it the most. Simply visit optimizeyourself.me/subscribe to never miss another episode. Lastly, stay safe, healthy, sane, and most importantly, be well.